In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Friday, December 16, 2011 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown every Friday at 3 o'clock, and today is no exception, but it's a little bit of a twist today as we get close to the end of the year. And I think for the first hour or so of the program, we're going to be able to avoid a whole lot of focus on the shutdown. It'll probably come up at some point in time. But, of course, the latest on that is House has passed a spending bill. The Senate's expected to tonight, so there shouldn't be one. But we're not going to focus on that. We are counting down in this hour the three most important federal IT news stories as chosen by former eGov administrators, Karen Evans. Great to see you, Karen.
It's great to be here.
And Mark Foreman. Good to see you as always, my friend.
Likewise.
You guys have chosen, made some very interesting selections for the three most important federal IT stories of the entire year. And so I'm very excited to hear about them. Karen, you have a little bit of a twist to yours. They weren't the stories that I expected to see, but you said, do you want to know my logic? And I said, no, I want you to save it for the radio. So give me maybe two or three sentences about what we're going to hear, what the thread is as we hear your selections this afternoon.
So I put a lot of thought into this since this was for the year. And the way that I selected my stories were stories that you may not necessarily think about at first blush, but that they have long-term policy implications on the federal government as a whole.
Okay. Now, Mark, your choices were pretty much straight up. So when we start, we're going to start with, of course,
number three.
And Mark, we'll start with your third most important federal news story of the year. And this is from Politico. A poll says little love for big gov. And there, I actually saw a little bit of a silver lining here. But tell me what you saw when you looked at this.
I did not see a silver lining. You know, I 2 points. First of all, I think that this puts at risk so much IT spending. We consider how much we spend on IT that the voters would consider part of Big Cov or Big Brother. And it's substantial. It's money in collecting data, listening, and all those feelers to collect data, massaging that data, mining it, matching it, targeting. All the great breakthroughs, I think, in counterterrorism over the last few years. And the second point I make is that risk a lot of IT spending is that the current transparency initiatives are not a credible mechanism for building trust.
Mm-hmm.
So you look at such big pockets of IT spend, and you recognize that it's not the type of spend that has a lot of political support. In fact, again, as we say about transparency, it clearly isn't working.
Mm-hmm. The silver lining that I saw here, Mark, was when I dug down into the survey. This was a Gallup poll about people's perceptions, and people were asked, do you distrust big business, big government, or big labor the most? And the number that's cited in this Politico story, 64% citing big government, that number has been pretty consistent in the low to mid-60s over the past 30 or 40 years. So that was the silver lining that I saw, was that despite the anecdotal evidence that we seem to be seeing in the country, there hasn't been a huge spike of people giving up on big business and big labor and saying that big government is a bigger threat.
You know, that's a good point. I think some of the more stark parts about this is 64% is the percentage of independents that came out of that survey that said that they don't trust government. Mm-hmm. Now, you add that to the 82% of Republicans that don't trust big government. And, of course, so many, again, of these big government initiatives people associate with the Republicans over the last 10 years. But also about half of the Democrats say they don't trust big government. That's phenomenal to me, because so much of the Democratic policy seems to be built around government as savior.
How do you think this might manifest itself in what we see in February in budget requests?
Well,
any implications for this at all?
I don't know that anybody putting together budget requests listens to this, to be honest.
No, but the tenor that we have seen in the United States has been like this now since, what, a year and a half or so ago. So I wonder, that's enough time to start maybe showing up in the budget cycle.
Right. Well, you know, the thing that's probably near and dear to Karen and me, the EGOV fund, was in jeopardy this year. And it was refunded, or Congress agreed to put the money in there, mm-hmm. because they believe that it supported transparency. You know, this clearly shows that that's a good argument for Washington. It's not playing with the voters at home.
Yeah. Mark Forman's third most important federal IT story of the year is from Politico. Poll says little love for big gov, and it's linked up, as our stories always are, on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Karen Evans, your story is headlined, Comedy of Errors Led to False Water Pump Hack Report. It's from Wired.com. Now, when this story first broke, and people thought, oh, my heavens, the Russians have hacked into a water pump. This is the event that's going to change the perception of cybersecurity as far as the infrastructure goes. And it turns out it was nothing of the sort.
And there's a lot of implications. The reason why I picked this story, there are huge implications from something as simple as, why would a person working for a contractor have ability to have remote access from Russia?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's the first one. So some basic things that you and I have talked about in the past, like control of the desktops and the configurations. Well, one of the configuration settings would have shut down system administration, remote system administration access, which means if you had followed those basic configurations, this person would not have been able to remotely go and do what his company had asked him.
Mm-hmm.
But what's even a bigger threat as this rolls up is that I'm afraid of what's going to happen is this came through the fusion centers that are out in the states. So I think this has huge implications for information sharing and the policies associated with information sharing between the federal, state, and local governments,
mm-hmm.
because of the way that the information was not necessarily vetted out fully before it hit the national press and those types of things.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it has a lot of reverse impacts, negative impacts on strides that were made from the fusion centers in the state to share information, for the information sharing overall in different subject areas, but also for some like just basic, you know, cybersecurity types of things, basic types of questions like, why are you letting this guy have remote access from Russia?
Mm-hmm. I was surprised at how this story disappeared. It was all over the place. This infrastructure's been hacked. And, I mean, just the sky is falling stories, and you both saw them all.
Right.
And then, what, 3-4 days, a week maybe? Well, it didn't happen after all. And then, boom, it was like this thing's not been heard of since until you brought it up today.
Well,
I'm glad you did.
And then what has also happened is that now you see that the authority figures, you know, like you've got FBI, DHS, those guys are out there saying, no, this particular one was a problem, but we do have issues that are happening out in the SCADA systems, and we do have issues that are happening out in critical infrastructure. So if you are a chief information security officer in one of the sectors and you're trying to explain to your CEO what's going on, and then somebody else who's competing with you then says, look, this is so immature, they can't even figure out when somebody's really supposed to be in there doing maintenance or not.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we going to invest in these guys? They're like Chicken Little. This, to me, has the potential of setting things back when it really, really needs to be looked at overall for a lot of different reasons.
This is really amazing. Jim Mimlitz, founder and owner of Navionics Research, says last June he and his family were on vacation in Russia when someone from Curran Gardner called his cell phone seeking advice on a matter and asked Mimlitz to remotely examine some data history charts stored on the SCADA computer. Mimlitz, who didn't mention to Curran Gardner that he was on vacation in Russia, used his credentials to remotely log into the system and check the data. He also logged in during a layover in Germany using his mobile phone. When a water pump failed, that Russian IP address became the lead character in a 21st century version of a Red Scare movie. This is from Wired.com. It really does make you step back and say, how far have we really come?
Right. And that's my biggest fear in this story, because this story can be played a bunch of different ways, and it just has so much implications into a lot of things that, like Mark was talking about earlier, where we've put a lot of sharing mechanisms in place and we're making the arguments for these transparency types of things, and yet something as basic as this really exemplifies how far we have not come.
Mm-hmm. Karen Evans' third most important federal IT news story of 2011 is from Wired.com. Comedy of errors led to false water pump hack report. And you can read it posted now on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Second most important federal IT news story of the year from Mark Forman and from Karen Evans. When the Federal News Countdown continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Air Force improving financial information and achieving audit readiness. What is the U.S. Air Force doing to improve its financial operations, become more efficient, and control costs? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and much more with Dr. Jamie Morin, Assistant Secretary of the Air Force for Financial Management and Comptroller, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
I'm on a mission to spread the word about COPD through music. COPD stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. My grandfather suffered from symptoms of it, and COPD is the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S. I'm Billy Ray Cyrus, and I drive for COPD. Looks like people are starting to get the message. Anyone age 35 and older who has smoked as little as 100 cigarettes could be at risk. Visit driveforcopd.com today and talk to your doctor.
Here's Jim Zarzycki, Noblis Fellow, commenting during a recent Noblis Insights panel titled, Can Innovation Survive Budget Cuts?, sponsored by Noblis.
I think federal government has people who are trained. Sometimes that training doesn't go all the way back to understanding how to generate requirements. Contractor augmentation is an important part of the strategy. That you really would like a person who understands the mission, understands that client need, also is a technologist, and also has the programmatic smarts, so understand what it takes to actually get it through the acquisition process.
To listen to the program in its entirety, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
When the stakes are high, government agencies turn to Noblis for science and technology solutions that will help them improve their performance and achieve their missions faster. Noblis is experts in national security, transportation, healthcare, sustainability, and enterprise transformation. Excel at turning ideas into innovations that accelerate the delivery of services and business solutions. Learn more at noblis.org.
I just got 4G LTE from AT&T here in Washington, D.C. And let me tell you, it's crazy fast. Up to 10 times faster than 3G. My roommates can't keep up.
Ooh, Jenny, did you hear?
That Barbara has an extra ticket to the concert? Lisa, that's so 42 seconds ago. I already downloaded it from a link she sent me.
Oh, great.
Lisa will forget about that ticket soon. See, about 52 seconds ago, her boyfriend changed his relationship status to single. She doesn't know that yet, but she will in 3, 2, 1...
AT&T, rethink possible. Introducing AT&T 4G LTE in Washington, D.C. with speeds up to 10 times faster than 3G.
The new HTC Vivid from AT&T. Stay a step ahead with AT&T 4G LTE where available. Featuring speeds up to 10 times faster than 3G. Only $199.99. Visit att.com or store for details.
Limited 4G LTE availability in select markets. 4G LTE device and data plan required. Claim compares 4G LTE download speeds to industry average. 3G download speeds new to your wireless service agreement with minimum $15 monthly data plan required. Other charges and restrictions apply.
Wake up and drive in with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris on the Federal Drive. It's your early line on the day ahead from your trusted advisors. Tom and Amy give you a full view of the issues. Find out what your colleagues in other agencies are up to and what policy and congressional developments mean to you. The Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
But We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown today is a little different than it normally is. Usually we count down the three most important federal news stories of the week, as chosen by two people who are experts in the world of the federal government. Now, I certainly have those experts today, former eGov administrators Karen Evans and Mark Foreman, but we are counting down their choices for the three most important federal IT stories of the entire year of 2011, and we're up to...
Number two!
Mark Foreman, your second most important federal IT story of the year is from the Washington Post. From August, the headline is China's denials about cyber attacks undermined by video clip. Now, one of the interviews I'm doing this afternoon is with Lee Rainey from the Pew Internet Center, and we're talking about this very thing. People should start to assume that they're being watched and videotaped just about any time they're out in public. And the Chinese government even needs to learn that, it looks like.
Sure, yeah, and I won't speculate about whether or not they knew that this was out there
right.
or not. But, look, this makes public to not just folks inside the Beltway, but to the average person, this issue of cyber warfare. You know, it's no longer just a geek theory. It's no longer just intelligence analysis. We've got a smoking gun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a picture of this guy showing them how they do cyber warfare. They've got software to do cyber warfare. And so I think this brings the issue home to anyone that uses a computer.
The story says, a video clip showed a military computer program on which an unseen user selects a target, in this case a Falun Gong website based in Alabama, inside the United States, and hits a button labeled attack. I mean, you can't, Karen, make it too much more plain than that,
no,
I guess.
No. I mean, it's. I'm kind of glad that on one level this stuff is public. Ellen is great when she covers these stories. Because it makes it real. So
Ellen Nakashima of the Washington
from
Post,
Post
is the writer here.
And so it makes it real, and the video makes it real, so you can't make this stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really does. So you kind of have to balance this against the other story that I figured Mark would have some kind of cyber story. You knew both of us would have some type of cyber story.
Yeah, not surprised by that at all.
Yeah, well, because it really is important, but both of them are showing the two extremes mm-hmm. of what you have to deal with when you're delivering services. And so from a federal government perspective, balancing these two extremes of trying to provide services to the citizen is really tough.
Now, your colleague and friend Jim Lewis at CSIS is quoted in the story. He says, their official line is, they're innocent. Why are you blaming us? In the clip, he says they were caught with their pants down. Now, to your point, about not speculating, it wouldn't strike me as unusual at all if this was entirely 100% purposeful.
Right. Well, and there's a second point in the article that I think is very important as well, about the countries beginning a dialogue, us and China, to reduce tensions in cyberspace.
Mm-hmm.
I think, speaking for myself, but I'm sure Karen had the same experience, and I'm sure Vivek and now Van Roekel having the same experience. Getting the policy apparatus interested in understanding IT and cybersecurity issues is difficult. It doesn't come natural to most of the people involved in foreign service. And so I think this is long-term, perhaps one of the most important insights. The smoking gun is very important in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
But also the point here about the fact that the policy officials have started to understand cyber warfare is an area of diplomacy and international policy, I think is another important point in this article.
The cyber diplomacy part of it is the part I have not heard or read a lot about yet, Karen. This story cites the July release of the Pentagon's first cyber strategy. We've all followed the stand-up of Cyber Command, so we know that from a cyber defense or cyber warfare position, the government obviously has a plan in place and is executing it. But the cyber diplomacy part of it sounds, at least from a lack of knowledge about what agencies might be doing, State Department for one, like maybe there's still some work to be done there.
Well, the administration did release a strategy going forward about the types of things that they wanted to do. So this was in response to the 60-day review.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea here is really to go back and look at your trade agreements, your international agreements that you already have in place, and to see how much of them are actually applicable in cyberspace. And, you know, you don't want to necessarily result to warfare, so to speak. And then the other piece that you really have to work out here, and this is the big discussion here, and I think the underlying piece is, what set of transactions in cyberspace are going to constitute an act of war?
Mm-hmm.
And that really is, do you do diplomacy first? And this is something that the government really needs to work out, because this is another quote-unquote domain, just like any other place. So where are countries going to draw the line and say these types of activities constitute an act of war, therefore we're going to take out your electrical system, or mm-hmm. we're going to do this, or we're going to do that? And I think that is what is really important in this article, is that those discussions are happening, saying, okay, let's go forward, let's work some of these things out, let's get an understanding of, does the trade agreement that we have in place, does the international agreement we have in place apply in this domain? And if it doesn't, why doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And so those are the types of discussions that are happening now on the international aspect.
One more thought about this story, Mark, to tie it into Karen's number three story, which is, we've talked a lot about China, and I don't think anybody would argue with the idea that they are probably the number one cyber threat as a nation state to the United States. But Russia's probably up there, too. Russia's suspected of the cyber hacking in Karen's story number three against the water system in the Midwest. And this isn't just a U.S. versus China thing. This isn't a Cold War structure, is it?
Right. It's clearly an emerging arrangement. I think it's pretty clear that you do have this state-sponsored activity in there. And that brings it into the realm not just of the military, but of diplomacy and foreign affairs.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you, it doesn't come natural to foreign affairs folks. And I think it's a very, very good sign to see that negotiations are occurring, not just in the U.S., but I think we've got top-notch foreign affairs officers. So I think this, too, is a global issue of how we get the foreign affairs people, those people that are engaged in all the negotiations that Karen mentioned, really understanding the issues, mm-hmm. and able to have a knowledgeable conversation,
yeah.
about what the policy options are.
Mark Forman, story number two, the second most important federal IT story of the year is from the Washington Post. Ellen Nakashima and William Wan's story from August headlined, China's denials about cyber attacks undermined by video clip. It's posted now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Karen Evans, number two, most important federal IT news story of 2011, when we continue on the Federal News Countdown on In-Depth with Francis Rose.
Attention federal and military agencies. If you've got communications research or other equipment to launch into geosynchronous orbit, Intelsat General offers this wake-up call. With deep spending cuts in place and more on the horizon, it's never been more important to follow the national space policy and work with an experienced commercial-hosted payload partner who can deliver fast, reliable, and cost-effective access to space. Intelsat General is that partner. Learn more at spacedelivered.com. Intelsat General hosted payload program. That's spacedelivered.com.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The General Services Administration wanted to host web videos to help members of the public get answers to frequently asked questions about the federal government, so they turned to the public to make the videos. GSA held a contest telling people they could make 30 to 90 second informational pieces based on the information at answers.usa.gov. Out of about 50 entries, GSA picked the five best and awarded a $1,000 prize to each winner.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results.
General Dynamics Information Technology, information technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
This is Lisa Millman from AFMA. For over 132 years, we've been protecting all military members and their families with low-cost life insurance and unique survivor assistance services. We focus on our members' best interests. That means offering the best prices on life insurance for all military personnel and policies with no war, no aviation, and no terrorism clauses or surcharges. Get a free quote today at AFMA.com. That's AAFMAA.com.
Too tired to drive. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss. With HHS HealthBeat, working late, shopping late, staying up late to watch the holiday specials or whatever, it all adds up. Well, actually, it subtracts, and dangerously, from being able to drive safely. At the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Daniel Chapman says that what adds up from drowsy driving are hospital visits and deaths.
Drowsy driving was implicated in about 16% of fatal crashes and about 13% of crashes resulting in hospitalization.
Chapman says one survey reported 28% of people said they had fallen asleep behind the wheel in the past year. Especially in the holiday season, with lots of people taking long road trips, getting the 7 to 9 hours of sleep that most adults need may need to be a priority. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies. And your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown every Friday in the 3 o'clock hour. And we're looking today at the three most important federal IT news stories of the year of 2011, as selected by former eGov administrators Karen Evans and Mark Foreman. And Karen Evans, your story number two, your second most important federal IT story of the year, is a Bloomberg story about the battle between Google and Microsoft when it comes to the cloud. What do you think this story says? Well, I want you to tell me why you selected it, but I also want to know what you think this story says about where we are when it comes to cloud computing and government as we get ready to close the year out.
Well, so you knew we couldn't make it through these stories without having some type of cloud.
Got to be one.
We had to have one. But the reason why I chose this one in particular is because it's going to drive a lot of the way government procurements roll out, because it's on the basis of the GAO decision that happened, the Government Accountability Office decision that happened, based on the big government-wide procurement that GSA is trying to put in place. So this touches the 25-point plan, you know, getting commodity IT out there, just a bunch of different things. So logically, it makes sense, but this decision that came down has huge ramifications from it, long-term ramifications. And the two parts of the decision that really kind of seem to go against each other is the part about where you can have data centers located. So you can have data centers located anywhere where we have trade agreements. So if we have trade agreements, say we put a trade agreement in with China, or we have one with Afghanistan, or any of these other places that appear on, you know, a terrorist watch list, or any of these other types of things, because we have a trade agreement in place. And technically, the way that this reads, if we're not, as a government, very specific about what our requirements are, in order to gain the efficiencies, the cloud provider can actually have data centers located there, and your data can flow through there. So that is an interesting proposition for government agencies. But the second part of this decision then said, but you can have government community clouds. So if you can have government community clouds, that means you can put government, which is federal, state, and local governments, together. So now so think back to my first story about the fusion centers. So now you have federal, state, and local governments located at a fusion center. You want to put it into a cloud type of approach, But now you have state procurement rules that say, gosh, the data has to stay here within our state, or the data center has to reside in our state. So how are you going to then start, you know, bringing together these multiple issues in order to really gain the efficiencies of a cloud? So this type of thing really lays the groundwork for governments have to be really good about its procurements, which means it's going to bring back enterprise architecture, Mark's favorite type of thing, right? Because if you don't really architect these things out well, mm-hmm. and then you go into the procurement process, you have international issues now associated with this. You have data sovereignty issues now associated with this. You're going to have law enforcement issues. So when you think about how mature we are from a cloud perspective, I think this highlights the fact that we're not really very mature mm-hmm. in what that solution should look like as we go forward, what we want the outcome. We know we want to save money and we want to gain the efficiencies of the cloud. The process to get there is still pretty complicated.
Do you see it the same way Karen does, Mark?
Well, I think it's even bolder than that. I don't think we have nearly... You know, we may have just a speck in terms of the magnitude of procurement people that we need that understand how to coin a service level requirement, let alone the architects, as Karen said. So buying from the cloud, you're buying IT as a service. The more you specify something that's customized to be unique, the less value you get out of that service mm-hmm. in the cloud perspective. The more you can adopt a standard template and leverage the heck out of the compute capability, the economies of scale, the more bang for the buck. Okay, so who makes that trade-off? Who has that knowledge? Who understands how to put that into a contract? And I think, actually, I'm pretty impressed that GAO was able to get as far as they could, because they've got a fraction of the procurement people that exist in the federal government. But mm-hmm. we're going to need a whole lot more people who understand acquiring IT as a service.
Now, that concept that you're talking about, Mark, is one of the things that Steve Van Roekel detailed when he brought FedRAMP out a couple of weeks ago. And my first question to that was, that's a great concept. I see what you're talking about and what he was talking about that idea. But how many times have we, over the past 25 years, say, in government IT, tried to force that down agencies' throats and they won't swallow it, the idea that you should do it the same way they do it and they should do it the same way the next guy does it and on, and everybody seems to want their own specially made thing.
Well, okay.
Not just in cloud or storage or whatever.
Sure. But 25 years ago, you know, we were just at the cusp of client-server architectures being built.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way you bought it. You know, we went through the 90s with the re-engineering. You re-engineered your part of the process that you could control. And then there was an Oracle, a Microsoft, a i2 or whatever app that covered your part of the process, and you bought that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're way beyond that now with the cloud, where so many things are integrated together, data is available as a service, and the government's on this path more and more. You know, take a look, for example, at the excluded parties list. That's a data as a service model.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So if you're providing the service, then yeah, the way you sourced it and bought your contractor support probably is not going to change a lot. If you're consuming that service, though, now it does change a lot. And there is an awful lot of architectural work that will have to be done in these agencies to figure out essentially some basic business concept. What's core and what's not?
Mm-hmm.
Do I get more value out of adopting a standard? I think the first place this hits are those back office operations that we're paying, you know, roughly $10 billion a year
mm-hmm.
to buy commodities. And we can't even reconcile, I think the last number was $17 billion of expenditures. So we're literally paying for the inability to do accounting.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, you're nodding your head in agreement with that, Karen.
Well, because I think this ties back to Mark's first story that he picked, his number three story about big government.
Mm-hmm.
So when you start really taking a look at this, I do think that the American taxpayer can take a look at what's the IT spend and then our inability to field a financial system when they can get Angry Birds down on their iPad for not, you know, for free.
Yep.
And get free upgrades and stuff. And they're like, okay, well, if Apple could figure it out, then why can't you guys figure it out? You know? And so there's a lot of pressure that's going on, and the idea of paying for it over and over and over again, which is what FedRAMP is trying to deal with, the security aspect of it, so you don't have to do that. And then looking at, you know, information as a service, data as a service, email as a service, everything would be a service, then you get out of IT is not a core competency for the federal government. Data and information management is a core competency for the federal government. And so that's why I brought up the architecture stuff, because big government and all this other types of activities, that's going to be debated at a policy level of what should the government really be doing.
Karen Evans' number two most important federal IT story of the year is a Bloomberg story that is linked up on federalnewsradio.com about the battle between Google and Microsoft over the cloud, and you can read it and all of our stories on the Federal News Countdown on the in-depth page at federalnewsradio.com. The most important federal IT story of the year 2011, as chosen by Mark Foreman and also by Karen Evans, when in-depth continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Donna Matthews. What does three decades of service add up to? For the Capital Area Food Bank, it includes these important numbers. Distributing 25 million pounds of food to nearly half a million people through a network of 700 partner agencies. 30 years, it's a long time. But the mission continues to make sure that no one is left hungry. To learn more, contribute, or volunteer, visit CapitalAreaFoodBank.org.
As the single largest generator of jobs for the Department of Defense, Lockheed Martin's F-35 represents more than just innovation and freedom. It's an advanced technology program that fuels our nation's economic engine. As a leading-edge fighter, the F-35 has unprecedented capabilities that will help America and its allies defend freedom. And it's creating direct and indirect jobs for over 120,000 Americans and impacting more than 1,300 suppliers in 47 states across the U.S. Software developers in California, steel workers in Pennsylvania, and engineers in Georgia are all working to secure our skies. The F-35 Lightning II program. Securing freedom, securing jobs, securing America's future. To learn more, visit F-35.com.
The Department of Defense faces some big changes in the coming years. I'm Federal News Radio's DoD reporter, Jared Serbu. We help you track those changes every Wednesday afternoon from 2 to 3 with On DoD. Each week, we'll talk one-on-one with defense experts and senior managers about the policies, programs, and innovations that affect warfighters and how the military will continue to meet its mission. That's On DoD, Wednesday afternoons at 2, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week includes Karen Evans and Mark Foreman choosing the three most important federal IT news stories of the entire year of 2011. And we're up to
number one.
Karen Evans, your most important federal news story of the year is our story from back in April. This is a great pull on your part, I have to say. Kudos to you for paying attention to our website for the entire year. This is an April 5th story headline, Social Media Challenges Agency Records Management. It says agencies are increasingly using social media in their work, but platforms like Facebook and Twitter offer challenges to records management. It's an ACT-IAC report, but the more things change, the more they stay the same. Here we are. This was April. We're here in December, and doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of movement since back in April.
So I picked this story because I think it's representative of the challenges overall,
mm-hmm.
and with social media and how social media, because I really was looking towards social media and the impact, for example, of what it has on transparency and the open government movement and the Arab Spring and all of those different things, right? And when does the government, so now you're starting to see the thread, when does the government get involved, right, on some of these things? When does the government not? When does the government support what's happening, like what we did with, we have Voice of America, right, through the radio waves? Well, when do we support different things through social media, and when do we not? And then the implications of this go even further about things like, if I'm an individual government employee that happens to be a procurement official on Facebook and I put my job out there, there's a whole set of rules associated with how I can use Facebook and not from mm-hmm. the Office of Special Counsel. So if I happen to click on I like a political website in this year, there's rules with that.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, the records management aspect of this is that from all the way up from governments down to the individual, we need to somehow be able to reconstruct this era that we're going through right now in the future from a NARA perspective, so that when generations look back, they can see how executives made the decisions that they made and how we arrived where we are. That's part of my history background. Mm-hmm. And right now, things are happening so fast. And I was glad to see that the administration did an initiative dealing with records management. But I think we have to think differently about how we deal with records management as well, and not in the traditional sense.
Yeah. How do we have to think about it differently than we're doing it now?
Well, because a lot of times records management becomes as an afterthought. And so if you deal with records management from the aspect of, like, for example, from the Freedom of Information Act, where anything could be asked for from that perspective, and you preserve information from that aspect,
mm-hmm.
that's a much different solution that would affect data, would affect storage. So I'm back to my cloud, how you would do the data, how you would do the storage, right? Versus if you decide, okay, I'm doing it from a records management perspective, I've deemed this a record. That's after the fact, which means all the other building pieces of evidence or that are along the lines with that could be lost because of how fast this stuff turns over mm-hmm. out in private industry.
Mark, our story, Karen mentioned storage. Our story references Washington Technology story, where Catherine Teddy, the knowledge manager at the Government Accountability Office, said one struggle is with storage space. That's not going to get any easier anytime soon as this volume of information just gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. People keep asking for fatter pipes, and they're getting them, and that means more stuff can be pushed through them.
Right. I have this libertarian flair.
You?
And no. This notion of big government that somehow everything needs to be collected and mineable.
Uh-huh.
You know, any communication. Okay, so as people have looked at this, there's some rationality. You know, if I have a conversation with you and nobody's recording it, but now I put that on Facebook, somebody's mm-hmm. recording it, somehow I've created a record. And I'm most concerned about this, I think, with respect to some of the reasons that I know the Republicans at least came out at 82% fearful of big government. So we have this legislation in the Congress that came out of the Democratic Senate that says somebody could declare me a terrorist and all of a sudden I'm whisked off to Guantanamo. Okay, and I was having lunch or breakfast with somebody the other day, and they were saying, what does this mean for the Occupy guys that disrupted the harbor in Oakland? Because terrorism in harbors, I mean, that mm-hmm. goes back to 2001, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So once the president signs this bill, do those guys get whisked off to Guantanamo? And the fact that they've organized on Facebook, does that become the evidence? Is mm-hmm. that the record that we're talking about here?
Yeah.
You know, I this kind of stuff we've got to figure out, clearly.
Mm-hmm.
And there are core principles, even in the Federalist Papers, about how we treat information and what's relevant and what's not. At the end of the day, the question is the ability to do an open and transparent review of the government actions.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's what we've got to figure out. It's not all social media. It's the use of this medium as any other medium to undertake actions that need to be reviewable by the public.
Mm-hmm. Mark Forman's comments there in relation to Karen Evans's number one most important federal IT news story of the year, federalnewsradio.com story from April, headlined Social Media Challenges Agency Records Management. It's linked up now on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Mark Forman's most important federal IT story of the year. To wrap up today's Federal News Countdown next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Giving you the edge on healthy living. Here's Mayo Clinic Medical Edge. With no cure and a wide array of symptoms and complications, lupus is a tough disease to live with and to try to treat.
Management of lupus involves a specialized care team involving rheumatologists, nephrologists, obstetrician, physiatrist, and other specialists.
Including rheumatologists like Mayo Clinic's Dr. Vaidehi Chowdhury. Why so many?
You name it, and that organ can be affected.
Treatments are varied depending on the type and severity of symptoms. Steroids, immunosuppressive, and anti-malarial medications are just some of the drugs used. Recently, the Food and Drug Administration approved the use of a new drug called belimumab for treating lupus.
Although it's the first drug to be approved in 50 years, the effects are rather modest.
Still, it's a sign of progress. More studies are already underway, giving both patients and their caregivers hope for the future. For more information, talk with your doctor or visit mayoclinic.org. I'm Tracy McRae.
And now Ask the CIO, brought to you by Vion Corporation.
Bob Kazimer is the Director of Corporate Information for the Army Corps of Engineers. He says mobile apps are making it easier for the Corps to fix problems caused by natural disasters.
Some of those applications that we're doing in prototype mode actually put into the field helped our surveyors as they looked for problem areas along the levees. Using those apps helped in the estimation of the commanders responsible there for coordinating efforts and ensuring that we could respond quickly.
Whether your organization calls it cloud, utility computing, managed services, or capacity services, at the core is the rapid provisioning of information technology infrastructure. At Vion Corporation, they pioneered capacity services 10 years ago. Vion was awarded the first and currently holds the largest federal government capacity services contract. They provide government IT owners an agile financial vehicle for meeting mission-critical IT needs. Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been delivering IT solutions to the government for over 31 years. Visit Vion.com to learn more.
Tickets are on sale now for the third annual Caps Care Casino Night and Auction. Sponsored by Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races on Friday, February 10th at the Hilton Alexandria March Center. Enjoy a night of gaming, live music, and mingling with your favorite Caps players and coaches. With all proceeds benefiting Washington Capitals Charities. Tickets are going fast, so visit WashingtonCaps.com/Casino Night to purchase yours today.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week, very special, with former eGov administrators Mark Forman and Karen Evans choosing their most important federal IT stories of the entire year of 2011. And Mark Forman, your number one story is the Federal Computer Week story from November, headlined Super Committee Fails, What's Next for Feds? And what I thought was interesting about this story is we're sitting here about 3.5 weeks later and still wondering what is next. We know what the spending bills will look like until September, and that's really about it. I mean, other than that, not much else is clear, is it?
I actually think it is pretty clear, and I'm it just it's it's something that I've certainly been fighting since the 90s, at least my time on the Hill under the learning and tutorship of Bill Roth and Dick Armey and some of the and John Glenn and, you know, some of the classic members of Congress that understood things in ways that I'm not sure people do up there now. But look, this demonstrates that the path of least resistance in budget cuts is a salami slicer, mm-hmm. or as our good friend Bob Haycock says, a meat cleaver. Just cut it across. They cannot rationalize between poor performing and good performing programs. They can't allocate resources between those. So we've got all this great data now in Congress that didn't exist before. We've got independent audits. We've got the GAO duplication assessment. We've got the GIPR data and now GIPR round two, and it doesn't hold a stick compared to the political positioning. And so I think this bodes very badly for all the federal employees and for the IT contractors that support the government. Mm-hmm. You cannot get rewarded for good performance. Mm. It's going to be a function of the constituency and how loud they scream and how powerful their lead member is that's going to determine whether or not you have a job.
Mm.
Now, this is not just cuts and pay. This is, will I have a job?
Do you see it that way?
Well, I do see that those are the forces that are at play, and I do agree, you know, whether you're going to have a job or not. I think what this does is highlight that it's easier to do the sequestration because mm-hmm. then I don't have to make the hard decisions. And I think what this also does is highlight that all politics are local. Mm-hmm. So one of the things is, you know, we expect Congress to act like an enterprise, like they are the board of directors, right, for an enterprise that's trying to achieve an outcome, when in fact there are 535 different CEOs up there mm-hmm. because they're trying to achieve an outcome for a small jurisdiction in the United States or a small constituency or, in case of some senior citizen types of things, large constituencies, right? Mm-hmm. And that's really hard when the executive branch is being run by one leader who's trying to achieve one thing, who's trying to organize the resources that way. I mean, those two management styles are just totally different. So they say everything they want, but the enterprise's view is very different.
Well, you know, the way Congress works is it's a sieve for information. Mm-hmm. There are always two sides of debate on an issue. And there's a hunger, a thirst for knowledge and information to play in that debate. But what I don't see now is the use of that data to rationalize the analysis. And I think part of it is governments become so complicated and so hard to explain these decisions, or maybe it's so hard to make these decisions that to some of the comments before about the issues going on in Britain and other parts of Europe, that you cannot get rationalization out of the legislature, as was planned in the Federalist Papers, because it's just too complicated. And so we fall back to this position of making cuts regardless of performance or rationality.
That's your second reference to the Federalist Papers on the program today. We can tell where your mind's been lately, Mark Forman. Your most important federal IT story of the year is from Federal Computer Week headline, Super Committee Fails, What's Next for Feds?